Noel did not exist before this episode. What they are about to describe is happening across Northeast as you listen. This is their story. In one of the most deprived constituencies in the country, physics graduates who want to teach cannot access the training they need, while local schools cannot fill their science teaching positions. The government that issues the pound tells would-be teachers it cannot find enough pounds to train them.
I'd always been good at explaining things. When my sisters struggled with their homework, I'd sit with them at the kitchen table in our council house in Walker, breaking down the problems until they clicked. Mr. Henderson, my physics teacher at secondary school, was the first person to suggest I might be good at teaching. "You've got the knack for it, Noel," he'd say. "And we need more physics teachers who actually understand what it's like to grow up around here." I was the first in my family to go to university. Mum was proud when I got into Newcastle University to study physics, prouder still when I graduated with a 2-1. But after 2 years in a call centre, answering complaints about broadband connections, I knew I wanted something that mattered. I kept thinking about Mr. Henderson's words. Physics had opened doors for me. Maybe I could do that for other kids. In September 2023, I walked into Newcastle University's School of Education and Communication to apply for their physics teacher training program. Dr. Sarah Mitchell, the admissions tutor, was encouraging but cautious. "The course is available," she said, "but I have to warn you about the funding situation." She explained that government bursaries for physics teacher training had been reduced from £27,000 to £15,000 for the Northeast region. "I know it doesn't make sense," she said. "We have acute shortages of physics teachers in local schools. But Treasury spending rules mean the Department for Education has to compete for a fixed budget allocation. Regional needs can't override national targets." I asked her to repeat that. A physics teacher shortage, but reduced funding for training physics teachers. Dr. Mitchell nodded sympathetically. "There is no funding," she said. "The budget has been cut." It sounded reasonable at the time. Budgets get cut. Everyone knows that. I couldn't afford to train on £15,000. Simple as that. I tried Northumbria University in January 2024, thinking maybe they'd have a different funding stream. James Walsh, the program coordinator for their alternative certification route, gave me the same news. "We'd love to have you," he said. "But the reduced funding means fewer places, despite schools desperately needing physics teachers." Same phrase. "There is no funding." Same apologetic shrug. I was starting to hear it everywhere. In March, I decided to try a different approach. I went to Walker Technology College, my old secondary school, to ask about direct employment as an unqualified teacher. Linda Cooper, the head teacher, welcomed me warmly. "Noel, Mr. Henderson always said you'd make a brilliant teacher." But when I explained my situation, her face fell. "We have 3 unfilled physics teaching positions right now," she said. 3. "But I can't hire you without qualified teacher status, even though I know you could do the job. The regulations won't allow it." 3 empty classrooms. A graduate ready to teach. But the system couldn't connect us because of a piece of paper I couldn't afford to get. Walking through Newcastle University's education building one afternoon in April, something caught my eye. Entire computer labs and seminar rooms were sitting empty. I looked closer at the timetables on the doors. Physics PGCE sessions, all cancelled. Room after room, equipped and ready, with no one in them. I asked the receptionist what was happening. She shrugged. Half the cohort places went unfilled because students couldn't afford to train without the full bursary. She said it matter-of-factly, like it was just how things worked. That's when it hit me. The contradiction was right there in front of me. The lecture halls existed. The equipment existed. The tutors existed. I'd met Dr. Mitchell. She was ready to teach. The schools existed. Linda Cooper had shown me the three empty physics departments. The students existed. I was standing right there, along with who knows how many others who had been turned away by the funding cuts. So what exactly was it that there was no money for? The government that prints every pound note, that stamps every coin, was telling me it couldn't find enough of them to connect the teachers to the training, to the schools. But everything else was there, waiting. I started to see it differently. This wasn't an accounting problem. The government that issues the currency had made a choice not to spend the currency it creates into the places where it was needed. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the classrooms were available. They were, all of them. I still think about those empty training rooms, about Linda Cooper's three vacant physics positions, about the kids who will go another year without proper science teaching because someone in Westminster decided there wasn't enough of the currency they create to train the teachers who were standing right there, ready to learn. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were, all of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It is the same logic as a household that says we cannot afford it, except a household does not issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. I'm still here, still watching. Still seeing the same contradictions play out across Newcastle, upon Tyne Central and West, where the need and the people exist side by side while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare. But now I know this isn't just my story. It's the story of every constituency where resources sit idle while officials explain they can't afford to use them.
What Noel experienced has a name, logical fallacy. This is when someone makes their argument by comparing two things that seem similar but are fundamentally different. It's like saying a goldfish bowl is the same as the ocean because both contain water. You miss everything important about scale, depth, and how they actually work. Every time someone told Noel there is no money for teacher training, they were applying household logic to a currency issuer. When a household runs out of money, it genuinely cannot spend more. When the UK government runs out of pounds, it creates more. That's what currency-issuing governments do. The false analogy treats them as identical when they're completely opposite. The Treasury tells the Department for Education to compete for a fixed pot, as though pounds are finite resources that must be found before they can be spent. But the Bank of England creates new pounds every time the government spends. The real constraint is never the currency, it's the resources that currency represents. And in Noel's case, those resources were sitting idle. Empty training facilities, unemployed graduates, unfilled teaching positions. When officials say we have to live within our means as a country, they're invoking the household analogy. A currency issuing government's means are not fixed like a household income. The question is never, can we afford it, but do we have the teachers and buildings? England currently has 40,000 teacher vacancies. The real constraint is recruitment and retention, not sterling. The resources existed, the people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Newcastle upon Tyne Central and West ranks 41 out of 543 English constituencies in the deprivation index and sits in decile 1, making it one of the most deprived areas in the country. English Indices of Deprivation 2025 MHCLG. The constituency has 1,025 registered charities, Charity Commission Register. Total grants received amount to £45.9 million, £360 giving grant NAV. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.